that might differ from what you do as far as attorneys. Because your attorneys are appointed, you wouldn't necessarily have to go through that competitive recruitment process. You wouldn't necessarily need to use the state's recruitment system to do that. When we do that, it just affords us a wider net, so to speak, as far as gathering the applicants from. But if you knew that you had somebody in particular that would you felt would be a good choice for this position, you could just go out and hire them off the street and appoint them to the position because they are an appointed.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Cool. I mean, is it best practice though, or I mean, not best practice, but does it look better if we open it up? I mean, I guess it does, but is that something that we would want to be concerned with? Or does it look worse if we open it up, but we really know who we want, and that's who we hire?
Pour a cold one, would you?
So, anytime you have an open position, it always does look, you know, better to go through the competitive recruitment process. Because then, you know, there's more transparency that way, and people can, you know, any recruitment that we do through that process is subject to, you know, to be grandmaed, and we, you know, people can look at it and say, why did you choose that person over that person? And, you know, and we can have all of our documentation as to why they were the best qualified for the position. Going out and appointing somebody that you already know, you don't always have that. You know, you say, well, I knew them, but, you know, if you would have opened it, then yeah, you could have gotten a lot more qualified candidates, but it just, you know.
Okay.
And some of it will depend on your timeline, too, you know. If they want to just, you know, appoint somebody, if you've been working with somebody in particular in one of the county courts or something like that, like Salt Lake County, and you know that they already have the skills that you need, then yeah, you could just appoint them.
I know it's not an issue right now, but let's just say 5 years down the road or whatever, you know, we're all still here. Does anybody have any questions for Susan? Why, you know, the pros and cons, would we want to just simply appoint someone? Because we have such a narrow focus, you know, for our resource process, that the challenge that we had both with Tyson and Marlies is I got lots of applications, you know, from people that had no experience whatsoever, you know, they're just looking for a job. So it would have been nice if I'd realized that we could recruit or appoint. But anybody have any questions for Susan, or we just wait and address it if it becomes an issue? Craig?
I don't have a question for Susan. If you if you go not at 20 for 20 from three-point line with Tyson and Marlies, no one complains.
Right.
If you bomb with Hannibal Lecter and you know, an undercover spy, then they probably would complain because you didn't review resumes. Yeah. So it's kind of outcome determinative.
That's true. All right. So I guess we could wait.
Yeah. And the council could just do their own independent type of recruitment and just, you know, ask for people to send resumes in, and you could review the resumes that way, and then it would go through the state recruitment system.
Okay.
And appoint that way.
Okay. You do a paper cut. And probably eliminate 99% of the folks who are, you know, moving in from Texas.
Yeah. So if we go the open route, but let's say that there's somebody, so the person that we kind of have an eye on didn't apply, can we invite them to apply and be part of that pool? And then does that kind of blur the lines if in fact we then hire that person?
If you went through like the state recruitment system, it might.
Okay.
But if you just did your own,
okay,
then yeah.
Okay.
It wouldn't look. Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to talk about salary?
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, so then can I segue that? So if the council does recruit, how do they set the salary for that person?
I would suggest that you still go through the same process. I mean, we would still look at the bar year and kind of get that gauge. I mean, you guys still set your own salaries, but I think you kind of have, in the past, have always looked at that.
Right.
At where they would land if we brought them in with, you know, with our regular assistant attorney generals. And then you kind of look at it and
go from there.
Kind of go from there as to what you want to offer.
Is it set up the way it is now just because that's the way it was set up initially and it's just never changed? Or are there reasons for having them be appointed, you know, no due process or appeal rights positions?
That's the way the statute was originally written.
Yeah.
And why, and the history of the council and how it was set up, and
So Steve can correct me if I'm wrong, is it's because, you know, just for convenience sake, we landed under the AG's office because we're not a separate state agency, so we had to have a state agency that could accept our, in our statutory funds from the surcharge, and so it's actually a line item on the AG budget. But I don't think they wanted council employees or the director to actually be an employee of the Attorney General's office, since the AG is a member of the council. And so that's why it's just an at-will employee. Is that kind of correct, Steve?
Yeah, that's great. So because otherwise, yeah, so they're at-will, but with them being under the AG's office, we just decided to utilize their pay scale as well.
It also obviated the need for UPC to have its own budget director, and IT and other ancillary support services, which would have been much more expensive. And adding five folks at the AG's office level didn't change the economies of scale for our support folks, so they were easier to just kind of assimilate rather than having the standalone superstructure that would have been underburdened and overpaid regardless of the pay structure. So does that make sense?
Yeah. And does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. How much leeway does the council have in with salary? So, you know, we start out with the base on number of years, but I know that some of the council employees are paid a little bit more than their number of years. What guidance do you have for the council on that? Be aware of the ripple effect throughout the office?
Yeah, and we do have that going on already, you know, to some extent, but, and then when it comes to, I mean, like the office also has other things set in place for our first service employees, that may or may not affect how you guys do your increases for your attorneys. On top of, I mean, they will get all of the like COLA increases that the legislature passes. You guys will also get those, because technically they are considered state employees. We do bring them onto the state payroll system, and they have the state benefits and all that. So technically they are still considered state employees. They're just appointed by the council.
But aren't there, there's a disadvantage, right? I mean, Tyson, these guys are, well, there's a little bit of risk involved, right? If you can just be cut loose anytime.
Right.
Right, you're like a city attorney. Mm-hmm. Who gets paid more, does more work, but also can just say hit the road.
Yeah, right? And then that's,
as far as the pay goes.
Yeah, that's kind of part of the reason for allowing that latitude in the pay structure, because you are at what they are at will and don't receive those same career service rights.
Right.
So what about like raises for Ron and or Marilyn? How would the council implement something like that?
So what we do, I mean, everyone gets the COLAs or anything that the legislature passes, and quite often the AG's office goes and asks for separate money to be used for discretionary increases. And then they use that, you know, they look at where the weaknesses are, where our we seem to be bleeding the most from, and try to correct those areas, like giving, you know, all of the attorneys a certain percentage of a rate increase, all of the support staff a certain percentage, over and above what the legislature has passed. And then I guess at that point it'd be kind of up to the council if they want to meet that, they want some of those funds to go in and do the same thing.
So that's not necessarily like a merit increase, or you've done outstanding work for the last 5 years, we're giving you a raise?
As far as merit increases, we don't, the office has not really implemented that yet. I mean, on a regular basis, what we do have is what we call a loyalty increase, so that, you know, every 5 years that they've been with the office, they get a 1.5% increase, just for being here.
And that's career service employees, so not the three of us, okay.
Yeah.
So is there there's no other automatic mechanism besides COLA for Bob, Tyson, and Lance?
Correct.
There isn't, within your structure, within our office, we have 5 grades. You start grade 1, actually based on bar years, and every grade increase is a 2-step or 5.5% increase up to grade 5. And then there's also a management bump, which I guess technically could apply to Bob in some, it wouldn't apply, but if you wanted to use a corollary, he would be the equivalent of a section director, which is also usually a 5.5% increase. So those would be what frames of reference for the council, if you wanted to look at that, that would still give some reward for the at-will status, but would also keep it within the range so that people didn't leave nasty notes under Bob's door, which they wouldn't in any event, but that's just a limit.
Okay, everybody understand that issue?
And where does that money come from if the council votes on an increase? Does it come from that above and beyond fund that is given, or does it come out of that budget?
It comes from our budget.
So it doesn't come out of that extra money that is given to the...
That's the challenge, is when our surcharge is down, there's not a lot of legal room in terms of salary increases for the three of us. Any other questions on that issue for Susan? Okay.
I have a question. So are we supposed to be looking at that, or are we just relying on you, Bob, as the director, presenting that in the budget every year?
Last year, when Marlise came on, you know, we set Marlise's salary, and as a result of that, we increased Tyson's salary by a little bit. So that's been, Tyson, how long? 18 months? How long's Marlise been with us? 2 years? Not 2 years.
Beginning of the year, I think it'll be 2 years.
Coming on 2 years. But no, I haven't factored in. It was on the agenda one time to talk about a pay raise for UPC staff, but there was no money, and so it got bumped, and there's really not money again this year in the budget. So, but to answer your question, yes, that's something that you as the council would direct me to take a look at it and present it to the council.
Traditionally, it's been presented as part of a budget in
right.
the June meeting.
Yeah.
If we had money we thought would be available, we've looked at it at those points.
Yeah. And this year.
When we don't have money, that's when you earn your money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true.
Right.
It's, your job is much more difficult.
Right. So, but good question. Thanks, Rob.
Okay. We kind of talked about a little bit the disciplinary process and the grievance process.
Before you do that, I want to lay some groundwork why I'm having Susan talk about this. Hopefully it will never, ever come up again. But because it did, and we didn't really quite know how to do it, is when Ed Berkovich left the office, there were a complaint filed. Ed filed a complaint against a UPC staffer. A staffer filed a complaint against Ed, and so an investigation was done. And a comment was made, I think, just by somebody that didn't understand the nature of the employment, is why was the council not investigating its employee, but the AG's office conducting that investigation? So that's kind of a background for this question.
So, I think I was just fairly new at that time, and I was not involved in any of that, so I can't answer as far as the specifics.
Yeah.
But, because, you know, the attorneys on your council are brought on as state employees and can, the state is still liable for any like discrimination or anything like that. You know, if they were to, if you were to let them go, and then they can turn around and sue the state as well as the council for unlawful termination. And so for that reason alone, I would think that, well, you would want somebody from the AG's office coming in and investigating that, just to make sure that if termination is decided based on those allegations that were being made, that we have done an independent investigation, whether it be by the AG staff, we can call in DHRM. They've come in to help us with employment investigations in the past if we felt like that there was some kind of conflict of interest, things like that. So it just really helps to protect you, as well as the state, from any liability if we do our own investigations that way, or at least partner with you during that investigative process. And we would do the same, you know, with the support staff. Any allegations that they might make or any allegations against them, we would come in and do the investigations for those. Questions on that? It just puts in that extra layer of protection as far as liability. Because these, just what I've seen, I get HR newsletters from several different organizations, and a lot of them will include employment law cases that have been settled, or from the EEOC that they've gone after organizations, and with multi-million dollar settlements being made, it's just going to protect you. And I don't know, is the council insured by risk management?
That I don't know. I don't believe so. But that's a really good question.
So
why wouldn't we be? That's under the Attorney General's office, right?
Well, say that's kind of where this weird status comes in. Is
created by statute, you think it would go under?
Yeah, I would think so.
I don't know.
We'll have to clarify.
I mean, if you are, then you've got that extra there. I mean, because if you are insured by risk management, then they can step in and help with settlement costs that way. But if not, then you definitely want to get investigated on that. Just to make sure that you're protected that way. Especially, with the at-will, once, with the career service, with their due process rights, they also have, if they appeal any discipline to the Attorney General, and in cases where there is going to be any kind of loss of income due to like a suspension or demotion or termination, they also have an extra layer of one more appeal where they can go to the Career Service Review Office and file an appeal with them. If the Career Service Review Office finds for the Attorney General's office, thanks, then that also helps, to limit any kind of liability.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah. All right, thank you, Susan. Like I said, we've got some new council members and old council members, and I figured we just need to all get on the same page, so. Cool,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Let's take that.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate it. Okay, so I'm going to jump backwards now. Let me see. Where did we get?
Duration and minutes.
Oh, yeah, we're doing minutes. Oh, yeah, take a few more minutes unless we're ready to.
Just, and this is a practice pointer for people. This is not under state law, but just under federal law. When, even when you terminate a probationary employee or someone that's an at-will, you still need to give them a name clearing hearing. They don't even have to show up. You just have to give them the opportunity to come in, just in case they think that their name was besmirched or whatever, just for them to be able to come in and say whatever piece they want to say. So just to, anyway, FYI. That's not well practiced in Utah, but anyway.
Okay, thanks, Steve. That's good to know. Do we need more time to review the minutes? I know Steve just got here. Steve Foote, we're glad you made it from port. So is there a motion on the minutes?
I don't know how hyper-technical it might be. There's just a couple of titles on representative names on, what page was it now? Page 4. The big paragraph, about two-thirds down. I believe that's Andereg, representative Andereg. And then Stuart Adams, he's a UARP.
Okay, we can fix those. Any other changes that anybody saw? Okay, so with those changes, is there a motion?
I would so move.
Mr. Garside, second?
Second?
Second. Ryan Peters, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, great, thank you. Okay, so let's go back to council members. So get another sticky, doesn't matter what size this time, and what I want you to write on this sticky is, what is your role on the council? And I could elaborate, but I'm just gonna leave it at that for right now. What is your role on the Utah Prosecution Council? What's your role on the council? Yeah.
Okay, what's going on when I walk in?
Everyone read some of the things you.
I know exactly. Okay, I can start over here with Rob since he appears to be done. What is your role on the council?
Diversity, leadership, and guidance.
Diversity, and you've checkmarked that. What do you mean by that?
I feel like I'm coming from a rural jurisdiction and I can provide that.
Okay.
That perspective.
And then leadership and guidance. Okay, I like all those. Janice.
So I am the designee, and actually I defer to Craig Barlow for the AG's office. But what I would say is that to represent the AG's position, to assist attorneys throughout the state, and then also to help with the education and training, also in my role as the criminal law section representative for UPC.
Okay. Excellent. Steve, you're still ready?
Yeah, I am.
All right. Mr. Barlow?
Same.
To represent the AG. Good. Okay. Steven?
My role is to assist the full-time employees to provide the best programming training for prosecutors.
All right. Jan?
Try and make sure that we provide all the services we need to, but still come in under budget.
Yes, I appreciate that. Fiscal conservative. There's not a problem with that. Ed?
Mine was advise.
Okay, advise. Haley. Haley has a unique spot. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Haley, what's yours?
I am the chair of UPAA. I represent the support staff.
Okay, guess I'm going to come back to that discussion just a minute. Are you done, Steve?
And so I got down into the weeds a little bit. Obviously, like you said, I'm a UMAA rep, so I need to make sure that the city training needs are met. But I don't see that as inconsistent making sure that the training for all prosecutors is met. I'm also UPC's representative on the Utah Youth Court Advisory Board, which was fun up until CCJJ started to get their hands in that mess.
Oh, so that doesn't exist anymore?
It exists.
Okay.
It may be someone else getting that assignment as I get grumpy and selected from that board. And then, of course, I mean, the overall one is what's been said. Make sure the objective of the UPC, which is instilling in all new and existing prosecutors what our objectives and our ideals are.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, these stickies are having a hard time today. Okay, Ryan.
I just have that advice.
Okay, advice. Will.
Substitute or proxy.
There you go.
That is fair. If
Sim were here, I think he would have said the diversity element as well. Salt Lake County is the only county that's not in one of the districts that are outlined. And because of our size and the urban demographic, our prosecution needs are distinct. And
so right, right.
We provide that distinct perspective.
Okay. Yvette.
OOMPA representative.
All right. What does that mean?
The municipal prosecutors, kind of like what Steve's saying.
Yeah, but on the UMA, he's UMA. And you, so Robert and Steve, just so everybody knows, are the UMAA, Utah Municipal Attorneys Association representatives. And Yvette and Ed are from the misdemeanor prosecutors. Okay, Robert.
Mine's pretty generic, improved knowledge of prosecutors across the state. Although I have been a bit conflicted in the past with my dual roles on SWAT and UPC.
How so?
Well, because I felt like there was a time, maybe when I first came on or just after, where there was conflict between those two organizations. Some of it was money, other things, maybe the direction that each of those organizations were going, who had what responsibilities and those kinds of things. Not so much anymore, but I have found myself thinking, am I here just to present ideas that affect cities, because that's, or municipalities, because that's the organization that I'm here appointed by, or should it be broader than that, right? Am I equipped to speak to other larger issues that county attorneys really deal with and I don't? So, I don't know.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Sim is the SWAP representative by statute. And referring to the recent history, Sim's voice is not necessarily SWAP's voice. So I think once you've been put in to this council, your perspective on all the issues facing the council, regardless of whether they're city specific or not, is of value and important to contribute.
Anybody else? I work for you, so I'm not going to tell you what the answer is.
I agree with that. The reason it's set up the way it is, so we get the diverse perspectives. We got rural, we got urban, we got large cities, small cities.
Yeah. Right. So everybody here at the table, except for Haley, are prosecutors. But by statute, we have a representative, the chair from UPAA, and by statute, we have the director of public safety, or his designee, Scott Stevenson. So what I want to talk about for just a couple of minutes is, well, first of all, let's have Haley. Can you tell us what you see as your role on the council?
Other than being here to represent support staff, we also kind of mirror UPC in the bylaws, budget, training. We have a 9-person member, other than the fact that we only have seven right now, we have two vacant. So I'm here just to represent and be the voice of support staff.
Okay. Are we taking advantage of that